This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 166, where I'm going to interview Steve Peschke about Office 365 Mon. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. If you're interested in all things happening at Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, Power BI, SharePoint or .NET, look them up on valid.nl. Good morning, everybody. This is Chris Johnson. It's just me today. AC is off somewhere in Asia, somewhere, Japan perhaps, somewhere like that. So this week you are stuck with me. But we have a great show in store for you today. I sat down with Steve Peschke, a longtime friend and fellow ex-Microsoftie for many years, who started a company called Office 365 Mon. I've been watching this company with some interest for the last 12 months or so, primarily because Steve was such a force to be reckoned with in the SharePoint community, especially around identity and access management. I mean, his nickname is SAML Man, for goodness sake. So he knows a thing or two in the SharePoint and identity space, and then off into, you know, Office 365 in recent years. And so I watched with some interest when he left Microsoft and what he was going to do next. And apparently he was going to retire, but that lasted all of about 35 seconds before he figured out, hey, I need to go do something interesting. And he started Office 365 Mon. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, a little bit about how it all came to be and the idea behind Office 365 Mon and what it's aiming to solve. I really hope you find it's an interesting discussion with Steve. Like I said, he's such an interesting guy. He knows a lot about everything, especially in the Office and SharePoint space. And so we're really lucky and thankful to Steve for coming on the show. So I'll go ahead and roll that interview. But before we do that, I just want to throw in a quick word from one of our fantastic sponsors.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Rencore. Rencore is a market leader in the code and analysis space, founded and driven by high-profile international SharePoint and Office 365 experts. Their main goal is to help any organization using Microsoft's enterprise productivity environments to work more efficiently by providing software that optimizes and secures their collaboration solutions. Rencore's most recognized product, the SharePoint Code Analysis Framework, SPCAF, is the de facto standard for verifying the quality, compliance, and governance of SharePoint and Office 365 customizations. If your company is using SharePoint or Office 365 and you're struggling to get your Office 365 and SharePoint customizations under control, check them out at spcaf.com to learn all the ways SPCAF can help you.
All right, well, welcome Steve to the show. Steve Peschke, we're lucky to have you on. This has taken a little while for us to organize, so we really appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us a little bit about what you're up to.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, so we go way back, but our listeners probably need to know a little bit more about you. So why don't you intro yourself and let folks know what you're up to these days and a little bit of your background.
Sure. So I'm Stu Peschke, and I know Chris from our time together at Microsoft. I worked at Microsoft for about 18 and a half years, doing a variety of things, but I think most folks that know me at all sort of associate me with SharePoint, and I spent a lot of time starting a program there called the SharePoint Rangers, and we worked with a lot of different customers in that role, and I blogged quite a bit about the various ins and outs of SharePoint in a blog called the Serendipity Blog, which is probably how most people know me. And then about 18 months ago or so, I left Microsoft, decided I wanted to try something new, something different, and something on my own. And that's when I came up with the idea for Office 365 Mon, which is a cloud-based service that's used to monitor services in Office 365, which means things like SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, Skype for Business, that sort of thing. And that's what we've been doing for the last 18 months, is just building up that service and getting the business started, getting customers on board, and that's where we're at today.
Yeah, so 18 years at Microsoft. Wow, that's a
That's quite a while. I thought I was there a long time.
Yeah, it seemed longer too. But you know what? In all honesty, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I have more friends there than I can count, and it was a great experience. But you know, like everything in life, you do it for a while and reaches a point where you decide, hey, I want to do something different.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we first either met or worked together. I was working in New Zealand many years ago and joined the Ranger, SharePoint Ranger team with you. And I was covering the APAC area, I think, at the time.
Right.
And gosh, that seems like an eternity ago.
Well, you know, the best part of that for us was, you know, we were all U.S.-based at that time, and the APAC customers are like 14-hour time difference.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, thank goodness we have someone to cover that time zone.
We're going to get somebody down there to cover these weird meetings. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
So you're on to your, I guess, second career with Office 365 Mon. So what does that do? Tell us a little bit more about that product and what sort of inspired you to start it?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny in terms of what inspired me to start it and where it's actually at today. So Office 365 Mon is really about monitoring the availability and performance of your, what we just call your Office 365 resources. So that can be your SharePoint sites, it can be Exchange mailboxes, can be Skype for Business as it relates to presence or instant messaging. And now within SharePoint Online, we also monitor the search service. So we monitor a lot of different things and provide you really close to real-time updates on what's going on, meaning we have a system of health probes that are based in the cloud. And so we check on your tenant on those resources about once every 60 seconds to 2 minutes or so. But what's kind of funny about it is that the original inspiration for this actually came one day when I was doing some research on Office 365 because someone had asked me a question about the SLA for it, and I wasn't that familiar with it. And as I was reading through that, I saw what the SLA was and then saw that there was a refund, you know, if they didn't meet their SLA, I thought, wow, what a great idea for a business to sort of monitor the SLA and help folks that don't get it, you know, to get a refund. And that was really the inspiration. But what's kind of funny about it, in talking to customers, there's actually a really, really small percentage of customers that come to us that are interested for that reason. Really, the reason why they come to us is because, you know, they have these processes in place for doing things on premises that they've been doing, you know, for 20 years or whatever, and now they're getting ready to move to the cloud, or they've moved to the cloud, and suddenly they have no visibility whatsoever to what's going on with those services. And so it really becomes a comfort thing for these customers to be able to say, hey, you know, we know independently of what maybe what we see in the service health dashboard or what Microsoft is telling us, we can independently sort of look at this and develop some new processes around what's going on with our resources up in the cloud.
Gotcha. So it's kind of a trust but verify kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So I guess that also means you got to send these probes into parts of customers' environments and all that sort of stuff. And one of the things you pride yourself on is doing this the right way, right? Versus freaking people out and doing it in insecure ways and things like that. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about how do you go about doing this and doing it in the right way that doesn't piss off Microsoft, but also you know, gives you the right level of information and in a secure way.
Yeah, I mean, doing it the right thing, and especially for, you know, those folks that kind of know me from SharePoint and all the work that I did around, you know, authentication and security in SharePoint, This is kind of one of my big things, and actually was one of the, you know, sort of key cornerstones of our company, and that is, you know, we always say that we will never ask you for your username and password, we will never store your credentials anywhere, and that's actually a big, big distinguishing factor between how almost everyone, if not everyone else in this space, does it. And what I mean by that is most folks will ask you for a username and password, and most folks will actually ask you for a username and password of a global administrator and your tenant. And I just think that's just absolutely the worst possible way to do that. I mean, you're then, I mean, not only are you giving them the keys to your kingdom, but you're relying upon them to store that securely, to hope they don't get hacked, to hope they don't have a rogue employee, you know, that goes Edward Snowden on you and walks off with, you know, with your credentials somewhere and goes to do something with it. And so the way we do it, we work exclusively with Azure Active Directory. We use access tokens exclusively, and that's how we get around asking for username and password. And not only that, what that allows us to do by using that whole Azure infrastructure is it allows us to use what we call a least privileged mode, which means we're going to ask you for the least rights required possible to access a resource. And not only that, we're going to suggest to you that you set up separate service, one or more separate service accounts for monitoring. And so that those service accounts, they don't have to have access to all your emails, all your distribution lists, all of your confidential company data. You can set up a separate site or sites for monitoring that don't have any of your corporate, you know, documents up there. Really, the idea is you have just endpoints, but not data, right? So just a place that we can connect to check in on the service. But we don't want your data. We don't want your credentials. We don't store any of your data. We don't do anything like that. And that's a really big key differentiator with us.
Yeah, no, that's really valid because, you know, you see a lot of tools where they pop up that pop your username and password in here. And in the world of delegated access management, I guess, for want of a better word, and being able to say, hey, application, you only get access to these specific little things that I want to let you. Once you give your username and password, you're pretty much hosed, right?
Right. Well, especially if you're given the credentials for a tenant admin. I mean, to me, that's just crazy. I mean, I would never give my tenant credentials to a third-party service. I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think people are getting more and more used to that. I think as you log into things with Twitter or GitHub or Facebook and things like that, I think people are more and more wary of, you know, popping a username and a password into a form as opposed to using one of the authentication methods they already use, right?
Right, exactly.
Gotcha. Hey, we've got a listener question here from Mario Fluan, I think his last name is. Does Office 365 Mon service only alert on downtime, or can it also be used to report on performance issues where emails or search or SharePoint services are degraded but still responding?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. So we have a couple of options for that. As it relates specifically to search, when you use our search service monitor, you can actually set thresholds and say, if queries are taking longer than X number of seconds to return a response, then go ahead and send a notification. And our notification process is actually, it's pretty nice. I mean, you can set up as many email addresses as you want. It could be individuals, it could be a distribution list. You can set up as many text messages as you like. But the thing that I really like is that you can also set up a webhook. And with the webhook, you just give us a REST endpoint. And whenever we have any kind of notification, and there's lots of different things that we send out notifications for.
I guess like pager duty and services like that, you know, let you do call schedules and support team management and stuff like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll just post a chunk of JSON to whatever that webhook endpoint is that you want us to send it to. And then you can build whatever sort of, customized workflow response you want to any of these sort of notifications that come in. So that's what we do from a performance standpoint for search. For SharePoint Online and Exchange Online as well, what we offer there is when you're using our distributed probes and diagnostics feature, and we can talk about that a little bit more later, but one of the features of it is that it allows you to have these health probes issued from different geographies where you have users, and you can set thresholds for each, you know, place where you're running that from. And so you can say, hey, maybe in London, if response time is more than, you know, 10 seconds, send an alert. And in Houston, Texas, if it's more than 5 seconds, send an alert. But you can set up, you know, different thresholds for any of these different locations where you install it.
Gotcha. No, that's really cool. I have another question along similar lines, actually. It said, this is from Andy McHagu, I think. He says, we had a degradation in our tenant last week and could not reach the admin portal or the Office 365 admin app for iPhone, so we didn't really know what was going on. Is that the kind of type of scenario for which your product delivers a better experience? I guess you're biased in the answer in this one. I think I know what's coming.
Well, yeah, there's kind of a that's kind of a two-part answer there. I mean, in general, what I would say as it relates to reporting on degradation, that's always difficult because degradation can vary for so many reasons depending on where you're located at, being one of the top reasons why, right? Actually, great example, even for outages, this is true as well, meaning, you know, when you think about your tenant, if you have users that are dispersed geographically, you can have some users that are working, it looks like they're working fine, and some users that are down completely.
Gotcha.
Why is that? Well, some of the times, it's not just the service itself, but it's one of the dependent services, like Azure Active Directory is the best example, right? So, for example, when you think back to over the last, I think, couple summers, there have been big Azure Active Directory outages in Europe. Right. And so we've had companies, for example, where maybe their users in the U.S. are working fine and they don't see any issue at all. Right. And for any monitoring that we're doing in the U.S., we're going to go, yeah, everything's working great. But for those folks that are in the U.K., you know, different geography, same in service, but some dependent service in between is down. Right. Well, they were completely down. Well, for those in our specific case, when we had customers that were monitoring, you know, had like the distributed probes doing monitoring in the U.K., or Europe, I should say, where they're having those issues, well, they spotted those issues. So the idea of sort of managing that type of thing where it's not really necessarily a service up or down, or it's maybe some dependent service that's impacting it, it's a lot more difficult to say, oh, yeah, here's something that we want to report on or not. So as we're talking about the admin portal specifically, in all honesty, I don't really think we have anything that would necessarily flag that because we're really targeting, you know, the specific sites that folks set up for monitoring.
So now, end user experiences.
Right. Now, I mean, they could certainly set up an admin site to be monitored if they wanted, and there's no reason why that wouldn't work. But again, just being frank, I don't know of any of our customers that have actually done that. They really have been looking at end user sites.
Yeah, gotcha. Gotcha. So it sounds like, you know, you're doing a bunch of this. So how do you scale this stuff, and how many tenants are you hitting, and how often, and the kinds of data that you're generating must be pretty significant. Can you tell us a little bit about your growth and how much data you guys are having to go store and manage?
Yeah, it's impressive, and I take very little credit for that. It's really, in all honesty, speaks to the power of Azure. I mean, we started out, I think our first month in existence, by the end of the first month, you know, we were at like, you know, 50 customers or something like that. And I think, I don't know how many months ago, we passed 1,000 customers and we're, you know, well past that. So we're growing at a pretty great rate. But our architecture, at a high level, our architecture is really based on using services in Azure. So we use cloud services to issue these probes. We use table storage extensively. We use queues extensively to manage the load. And it makes it really pretty easy to scale that up as needed. And so like when I was looking, like I was putting together a slide, for example, a few months ago for a presentation, I just looked at one day of activity for us. And in a single day, we had generated over a gig of reporting data that we had stored at the number of probes we send out each month. It varies based on the number of customers we have, but it ranges, I would say, right now, about 15 million probes a month.
Wow.
So there's a ton of scale that's going on there.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit about, I think, what you call distributed probes, right? Where you can send those probes out from different parts of the world and things. So how do you manage that behind the scenes? And do you use Azure's geo-located data centers and regions in those different areas of the world to go deploy parts of your app in that area that do those probes? Or have you got some sort of other neat technology going on behind the scenes to help with that?
We're not using the distributed nature of Azure for that right now, other than for high availability disaster recovery, that sort of thing. But for the distributed probes feature itself, in a nutshell, what happens is you download an install file from our website and you run it, and what it will do is it will install a Windows service on the machine where it's running at, and it works in conjunction with our cloud service. So what it does is it starts up and it reaches, you enter some information and authenticate again using Azure and what it does is it reaches into a REST endpoint in our cloud service, and it gets information about the resources that we're monitoring for you, the access tokens, that sort of thing. And then basically it just uses those that same process that we have to issue those probes. But those probes are literally being issued from the workstation that that service is running on. And that's actually really important, you know, to kind of go back to what I was talking about earlier with respect to, you know, how things can be different based on the geography you're in and some of those dependent resources. Well, when you think about it, I mean, some of the dependent resources for an end user are going to be your local network infrastructure as well, right? Is DNS working? Is your gateway working? Is your connection to the internet working? Are there, you know, are there traffic or congestion issues in your local network? All those kinds of things. Well, that's really kind of the beauty of the distributed probes piece of it, because it's running right on, you know, a computer in your local network. So all of those types of issues will be factored in as it's going out and issuing those probes. And then when it does, as it goes out, as it issues probes, as it gathers the performance data or outage data, what it does is it just talks back to our cloud service. And that's how we package up all of the data from all of those remote locations. It all ultimately gets funneled back to our cloud service. And that gives us a single point from which we can provide reports and alerts and notifications, all of that kind of stuff. The other thing that's really nice about that as well, then, is if you are having a problem and, you know, you think there's an outage or an issue connecting with Office 365, the diagnostics part of that tool will kick in as well. And those sorts of things that I just described, it will automatically go out and do a check on that if it can't complete those health probes successfully. So it'll check to see if it can connect to your local DNS. It will check and see, you know, what IP addresses the names are actually resolving to, because we've seen cases where the DNS gets messed up and you're trying to resolve a name that doesn't exist. It'll check that it can reach your gateway. It will check another random non-Office 365 site just to verify, hey, can we even get out all the way to the internet? And if we can, and we can connect to those other sites, and we know, hey, our infrastructure is good end-to-end, it really is a problem with Office 365. And that can be pretty valuable as well, then, if you go and open a support case with Microsoft, because they're going to have you go through all those steps anyway, right? Try and verify it's not an issue on your local network, and you go, hey, we've done it, right?
Have you rebooted your router? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess that's a super important point, because, you know, when I spent time on the Office 365 team, you know, one of the biggest complaints that we'd hear is about Office 365 performance. And in many, many cases, I don't know if it was the vast majority, but in many, many cases, it came down to the last mile, right, between you and the service, not necessarily the service performing badly, but things that happened between you and the service. And in one particular famous case I vividly remember were near and dear to my heart, New Zealand customers. And at the time, they were using Office 365 in the data centers that came out of Singapore. And there wasn't an Australian data center at that time. And if you happen to be a customer on one particular ISP, right, provider of bandwidth, they messed up their BGP routing somewhere on the internet, and you were being routed from New Zealand up to the west coast of the States, across to the east coast of the States, back to the west coast of the States, then to Singapore, then all the way back through and back to New Zealand. And so things like, you know, pings were taking multiple seconds, and obviously nobody noticed it with email, strangely enough, because it was very, you know, sort of fire and forget, and it just sort of sits in the background. But for things like document downloads and the responsiveness of SharePoint pages, it was very, very obvious something was really wrong. And by all accounts, the 365 service was working great. It just happened that the last mile between, or in this case, it's a few more miles, from this ISP was going haywire and going to the wrong side of the world and back. So I guess in those cases, you guys would, you know, help diagnose things like that with how's the DNS resolution working and how are you getting to the service and how long is it taking and all that sort of stuff for requests.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example of where, you know, setting those performance thresholds at those distributed locations would catch that and start sending out notifications and kind of getting back to, you know, all of the things, the diagnostics part of it that it checks. So, you know, when it does detect an issue, one of the things that it will do is log that to the local event log. So you can also set up monitoring on your local event logs where that service is running and get fired an alert if we notice, hey, there's a DNS issue, hey, there's a gateway issue or whatever. So there's lots of ways to sort of plug into that fabric.
Gotcha. Hey, we have another listener question here from Charlie Maitland. He says, hi guys, it sounds like you are once again going to introduce me to another hidden gem in the Office 365 Azure world. I've never heard of Office 365, Mon. As a dynamic CRM guy, my questions are, one, what is the extent of coverage the service will provide, and will it be extended to include things like dynamic CRM, Dynamics 365? And number two, how does this offering relate to Thousand Eyes? ThousandEyes.com. I'm assuming that Thousand Eyes is still an offering for 365, and is it? Have you heard of, I haven't actually heard of a Thousand Eyes. Maybe you have, Steve, but I guess, are you going to extend the service to things like dynamic CRM, other things on your radar and roadmap that you might start monitoring?
Yeah, so ThousandEyes.com I've never heard of, so I can't really comment on that or what they do. But the other question about, hey, what are you going to monitor, is actually a really great question. Because of the very specific way in which we do monitoring, sort of inherently limits us to what we can monitor. So I go back to what one of the first things we were talking about, which is security, right? In which I said, we only use Azure. We only use Azure Access Tokens. So there's one immediate thing that sort of should stand out based on that alone, which is we're not going to monitor anything on-premise. Mm-hmm. Doing anything on-premise is not on our radar, never going to be on our radar, at least as long as I'm here. The other thing is that we really require two things in order to monitor a service. One is the service needs to have REST APIs that can be used to connect to that service to work with the various pieces of functionality of it. And those REST APIs need to support access control via Azure Active Directory. Mm. So based on that, when we first launched, there were really only two services in Office 365 that did that, if you can believe that, and that was SharePoint Online and Exchange Online. And that's why those were the first two services that we did out of the box. Our plan has always been that as Microsoft expands the number of services that support REST APIs and authentication authorization through Azure Active Directory, that we'll look at moving towards monitoring those as well. Skype for Business is a great example. Skype for Business didn't support those until recently. In the last few months, what they've done is they've released in preview a set of REST APIs for Skype for Business in Office 365. Those APIs support access via Azure Active Directory. And so that was the point at which we added monitoring for Skype for Business, for IM, and for Presence, because those were the first two things, the first two APIs that the Skype team exposed. So as it relates to Dynamics for Office 365 or really any other Office 365, that's really going to be our approach. It's going to be, okay, is this service supporting REST APIs and authentication authorization through Azure Active Directory? If they do, then okay, great, then that's a service that we'll look at providing monitoring services for.
Gotcha. No, that totally makes sense. And I guess we'll start seeing that catalog slowly expand over time as customers ask for things and want you to go start probing them and monitoring them for them.
Yeah. And I mean, in fairness, and it's a good thing. I mean, Microsoft has come out publicly really over the last, I think, 12 months or so, and really put a stake in the ground to say, hey, you know what, we're really going to be working towards enabling Azure Active Directory as the authentication control to our services in Office 365. And since that time, you know, I knew Skype would be one of the first ones to do that, and they've come out with Skype. So I expect that they'll, you know, live up to that. And it's in their best interest as well, right? I mean, they're trying to move you know, everyone to the cloud as fast as possible themselves. So it's something that's going to happen. And as they continue to move, we'll continue to expand our service.
Yeah, gotcha. Speaking of Microsoft, how's the relationship? I mean, you're calling them out on their SLA, I guess, and making it a little painful for them when customers say, hey, we've noticed using this other tool that your service is down, and having a bit of an argument about whether they should be getting money back and stuff like that. Has that come up in conversation with some of your old friends at Microsoft?
It really hasn't. And I tell you why, it really goes back to one of the first things I was saying about, you know, what was the inspiration for it. And like I say, I mean, using the tool to get a refund, while that's definitely possible, that's in fact something that I did. Like the second month the service was up and running, it monitored a really long outage in my SharePoint Online tenant, enough to take my availability down below 99.9. And I actually used the emails that I got from Office 365 Mon as my proof to Microsoft support to go ahead and get a refund. Mm. But that being said, I would say a couple things. First off, the overall availability of the service has really improved. I mean, I've seen it, you know, in the last 18 months that we've been monitoring it, it's improved significantly. SharePoint especially, Exchange still has more work to do, but SharePoint is really, really doing well. So that being said, I kind of go back to the value proposition that I actually see most customers talking to us about. And it's really just, hey, I need some degree of comfort. I'm moving these things to the cloud. And from a Microsoft perspective, that's a good thing, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the more the customers get comfortable with moving their stuff to the cloud, the more they're going to do it, the more quickly they're going to do it. So actually, our service ends up being kind of a win-win for both of us.
Yeah, gotcha. And I guess it also means that they can... It really means the customer is in control of what they consider up and down, right?
Right.
I know Microsoft has definitions for what is up and down, and those can often be quite surprising and differ from what the customer means by up and down. I guess for their own internal reporting and their own internal help and service desks and things like that, that matters as well, right? Because if somebody can't get their email and Microsoft is saying, the Exchange service is up, that might just mean,
right.
you know, mail can still be delivered, but, you know, somebody can't connect to their inbox. Having that extra level of information for service and help desk folks would be super helpful in being able to deal with those calls.
Yeah, and that, you know, the distinction there is an important one. And the way I describe it is really that Microsoft looks at availability at the service level. Right, of all their tenants. They rarely go down into, hey, Joe's down and Sally's down and Timmy's up or whatever, right?
Yeah.
They're really looking at the service as a whole. And that we do it the complete opposite way. We only look at it at the individual tenant level.
Mm.
And that's really the classic example. Like you say, you know, Microsoft may say, well, hey, in, you know, October 2016, our SharePoint Online availability, our uptime was 99.993 or whatever. And that's great for the service as a whole. It sounds awesome. But that doesn't mean that there aren't folks that didn't have availability of, you know, 95 or 97 or, you know, 98.9 or whatever. That's what feeds into that, you know, less than 100% total that you get from Microsoft. And again, that's where, you know, we can be helpful. The service as a whole may look great, but there's always going to be, you know, these individual tenants that for whatever reason, you know, are having issues of some one kind or another. And that's where we can help out.
Hey, so if I'm a customer and I'm using your service, and you've obviously got a web app for viewing, you know, reports on how things are going and stuff like that. But if I'm a larger customer and I want to kind of integrate your service with maybe my own monitoring tools or my own way of aggregating data from around the company for different systems and things, do you guys offer REST APIs and APIs that or ways to get access to the data that you're collecting?
Yeah, absolutely. So the developer experience at Office 365 Mon, that's another area that I would say is just stands out heads and tails above every other service out there that does this sort of thing. I've not seen any other monitoring service for Office 365 that provides a set of developer APIs. And we have a huge set of developer APIs. And we really sort of would put them in two big buckets. So one is what we call the subscription management API. So all of those things that go into configuring what we're monitoring for you and how we're monitoring it and all of that kind of stuff goes into our subscription management Management API. And our SDK for that is getting close to 100 pages long right now. So it's pretty big. We have sample code for everything. Every single API includes sample code. So you won't get these sort of generic help pages that are really not that helpful.
This is the title.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta love those ones. Yeah.
On the reporting data side, we have a separate bucket of APIs for getting at your reporting data. Our reporting in general, I would say, is really super strong. So it kind of goes like this. We have a set of basic reports that you get out of the box that you get in our website. We have a set of advanced reports that you get out of the box in our website. You can go to our website and you can download the raw data as a CSV file from our website that we use for those reports. So if you just want to go do a point and click, download a CSV, double click, it opens up in Excel. You can build your own reports, do whatever you want. You can use our REST API and you can download the raw data for all of our reports. For any of the reports that we provide, you can download the raw data as CSV or as JSON, and then do, like you're suggesting, you can incorporate it into your own backend databases, your own custom dashboards, whatever you want to do with it. And then finally, we have our Power BI content pack, which you can get in Office 365, and that thing is just super awesome, cool. That's, I would say, hands down, what we get the most comments about is the cool dashboard and reports in Power BI that you get with your Office 365 on reporting data.
Yeah, gotcha. Because it's one thing to have the raw data, but it's another thing to be able to interpret it right and show it in interesting and useful ways, right? So that's really
exactly.
Cool. It sounds like, obviously, you're a developer at heart from over the many years, and it sounds like you put a lot of time and effort into making sure there's a good developer experience around your service.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a big part of that as well is why we did that as well is because one of the ways in which our service is used is by partners that resell Office 365. Mm. And so a lot of those folks have, for example, a first line support responsibility to all of their customers that they sell Office 365 to. So that was one of the big motivations as well behind that subscription management API, so that those folks that are doing that, they can go ahead and they can use our API to set up monitoring for all of their Office 365 customers, so they can configure it so they get notifications and then they can be in front of it with their customers when there's an issue in Office 365.
Yeah, I guess that's a really important point is, are your customers actual customers or are they partners mostly? Because I'd see a huge value prop for partners here about being more proactive with their support of their own customers, right? And saying, hey, I don't know if you noticed, but we've noticed these issues with your service and here's what we're doing to help out with that, and being sort of far more proactive than reactive.
Right. Yeah. So right now, most of our customers are individual companies. There's fewer that come from partners right now. Mm. However, we're in the middle of signing a couple of pretty large partner agreements. Mm. And once those kick in, I would say over the next few months, that's going to change pretty quickly to where the partner accounts end up being the majority of the customers we have.
Yeah, that'll be really, really interesting to watch. Because I could certainly see as a forward-thinking partner, it would be a very helpful tool to sort of get on the front foot with some of these issues.
Yeah, well, it's a great differentiator as well. I mean, we have partners that they're sort of, you can sort of think of it as two models at a high level. Partners that just want to use it as an opportunity, another revenue source, right? Mm. So they want to offer monitor, because we offer a discount from what, you know, our regular sticker price, so to speak, mm-hmm. to our partners. So they can, you know, basically sell it for the same price, make some money, and that's all fine and good. But what's kind of more interesting to me is we have some partners, including one of the ones that's coming on board, that said, well, we want to distinguish ourselves from other partners that are offering Office 365, mm-hmm. so we're going to provide monitoring for free. And they're just going to use our service on the back end to do that. But to their customers, it's going to look just like them, and it's going to be monitored for free. And it's, hey, maybe something that, you know, other Office 365 resellers aren't providing.
Yeah, it's all part of their managed service at that point.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Gotcha. Hey, so where can people find out more? What would you say is first steps for folks if they're interested in finding out what's going on with their Office 365 environment a little bit more?
Well, the place to go is office365mon.com. The number one thing I would recommend doing is we have a link right top and center on our homepage. It's like about a 10-minute video that goes through all of the different features that are in Office 365 Mon. So that's pretty painless to consume, and you can get a feel really quick for what's in there and if it looks interesting or not. The second thing I would say is from that same page, there's a Start Now link that'll create a new Office 365 Mon subscription, which is how we monitor things for you. You get everything for free for 90 days. Every feature is turned on, so you can try every single thing. You don't need to provide a credit card or any sort of payment information at all. You just get started. If you decide at the end, hey, this isn't my thing, then that's no sweat. You really don't need to do anything. After 90 days, we just quit monitoring your stuff for you and turn it off, and we're done. So,
gotcha. Oh, that sounds super easy to get going.
Yeah. Yeah, it literally will only take you, it takes most folks about 2 to 3 minutes to get started and get up and running and start monitoring their service. So it's designed to be easy.
Gotcha. That's awesome. I'm really pleased to see where you've taken the service. I've been keeping an eye on what's been going on over the last year or so with once you'd left Microsoft and we're off on this journey. So really pleased to hear it's going well.
Thanks. Thanks. I appreciate that. It's been awesome.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users to be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Hey, now, on one completely different topic, and I don't want to completely sideswipe you on this, but since you are SAML man, after all, I have to ask this, but
okay.
All SAML assertions lead to hell, I believe, was the name of the article that was put out a little while ago, which was, we talked a little bit about on the show about the rather large and gaping security hole that Microsoft had around some of the way they were dealing with SAML and authentication. Any final thoughts on that? Issues?
Well,
anything you sort of noticed that related to that stuff? My jaw was on the floor when I heard about this, and I actually can't believe it didn't make more noise.
Yeah, it was. My recollection is around certificate validation, basically validating that whoever signed the SAML token that was coming into your service was legit, and they weren't doing a good job of validating that the certificates that were used were really the ones that should be used to validate a particular token. So in essence, that could allow anyone to go say, hey, I'm Steve from Microsoft or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And sign it with my certificate and send it in and all that. So I agree with you that I was surprised. I had kind of two reactions. One, I was surprised that it didn't get more traction. I mean, that was kind of a big deal. But that being said, I also, for what it's worth, I give Microsoft credit. Their response to that was extremely quick to close that hole up. I mean, again, I was sort of under the impression that it was like, 6 to 8 hours, and they had a fix in place for that. So, SAML's a good thing. I like SAML. Hopefully you will too.
Everybody loves SAML.
But what's kind of interesting about that as a side note as well is, one of the other takeaways I would have from that is, despite what happened, that is the value of going with a big service provider for a service like authentication. And I bring that up because I have had folks in my time since I left Microsoft that want, Steve the SAML man to help them write their own, identity provider for SAML for their web application. And I just tell them, no, I think that's a bad idea, because then you end up owning and being responsible for figuring out all these issues, for finding them, for, fixing them. And, I don't think most people appreciate what a big job that is, what a full-time job it needs to be. So anyway, that was my other takeaway. Even though, we found a chink in the armor, at least they fixed it quickly. And it was because they have so many resources that are, devoted to making sure they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and it sounds like it was disclosed in a responsible way as well.
Yeah.
And not used against them. So that was great. Anyway, yeah. Thanks very much for coming on the show, Steve. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Office365mon.com is the place to go by the sounds of it. Where can people find your blog, Twitter, that sort of thing, in case they want to hear more about these topics?
Blog is samelman.wordpress.com is actually where all of our blog stuff is. So all the stuff I'm doing, you can find out there. Twitter, I'm just at speschka, S-P-E-S-C-H-K-A, or at Office365Mon. You can find us on Twitter as well. So we're pretty active in the blog and not as much in Twitter. More so on the blog is where we post things that are going on.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Steve. We'll hopefully talk to you again at some point soon.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.